here this morning for a few public hearings and possible work sessions. We have three bills before us today. Let's start at the top of the agenda, House Bill 2379. I'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2379. And Mazin, if you'll give us the staff report.
So, Mr. Chair, House Bill 2379 attempts to reactivate a law or extend a law. I'm sure every one of you brought with you your tax expenditure report.
Well, just in case we didn't, you made some copies for
us. Right. Bring it to your attention. Page 226, this program is in existence as the new houses in a distressed area, and it gives away the gives property tax exemptions for the houses being declared in those distressed areas. The law itself sunsets by the end of June this year, and the bill in its original form actually allows it to elapse for a whole year before it reinstates it. However, we also have an amendment, 2379-1, that attempts to remedy that elapse back to July 1st of this year, in order not to allow it to go into sunset.
I'm just trying to catch up with the amendment. I don't see an amendment. Does everybody else have an amendment?
Yeah, I do.
Where is it?
Right under
attached to what?
It's right underneath your purse.
Oh, no, that's the... Okay, here we are. Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Okay. Now, in addition to those issues, this bill, Mr. Chair, also attempts to expand the program from only housing or single units houses into more condominiums and multi-units. And in that, in doing so, and all these effects, I have estimated some revenue impacts of the original bill, and allowing the original bill, if you recall, allows the program to elapse for 1 year, and adding the multi-units, we're talking for about $2 million a year. That's 4.2 for the 05 or 07 biennium, but only $2 million for the 03 or 05 biennium without the 1 year elapse. Of course, that will not be the case if the amendment goes on. In a nutshell, that's what the bill does. There are many small other adjustments here and there in the bill to make sure that those expansion of the program goes smoothly.
Well, let's hear from the proponents. I have Representative Kafouri on the sign-up sheet, not here. Marge, do you want to come on up with is it Mike Saba? Saba, okay. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I can't understand where Representative Kafouri is. I drove her down here this morning, so I know that she's in the building somewhere, and she, I'm sure, will come and lend her support to House Bill 2379 and 2380, both of which come to you from the City of Portland.
Hey, what if I may, Marge? Kathy, would you just give a call up to the minority office, just so we made the good faith effort to let her know it's 1900. Okay.
Thank you. House Bill 2379 is one of two bills that we are bringing to you today. House Bill 2379 is focused on stimulating the production of housing for purchase in distressed urban areas of a community that chooses to use this program. We've used this program successfully since 1989. It sunset in January of this year. We were before this committee last session with the same bill, essentially, that you have today. the session, the that bill passed this committee, passed the floor of the House with a resounding vote of, I think, 53-0, because the seven others were not on the floor, and then ran into some problems in the Senate because of other reasons not associated with the particular bill. With me is Mike Saba, who is senior planner with the City of Portland Planning Bureau. He is going to explain the bill to you and its purpose and how we are applying it. And then I will go over the amendment that you have before you.
All right, Mr. Saba.
Thanks, Mark. Good morning, Representative Shetterly, members of the committee. I'm Mike Saba, City of Portland. I was here last session essentially with the same bill, trying to foresee this issue with the sunset date. But I just want to urge you, the City of Portland views this program as an essential program that was adopted about 10 years ago as a result of a local committee we had looking at the vacant and abandoned buildings in many parts of our inner city neighborhoods. It was seen essentially then as a tool to promote housing production of single-family housing in some of our most distressed neighborhoods. The bill was, program was spectacularly successful to the tune of creating 1,800 new housing units in the city, along with what you all know was a very healthy housing market at the time. A lot of our inner city neighborhoods in northeast Portland and outer southeast Portland were invigorated by the introduction of new housing units. A couple years ago, well, actually last year, City Council realized that this program achieved its purpose as a housing production program, simply as an incentive to produce new housing. What we did locally was narrow the focus of the program to create a home ownership incentive program. And by doing that locally, we imposed more income restrictions on the buyers of these housing produced by this incentive and required that they be owner-occupants of the housing. So we did that locally. And we find that now this is a very useful and important tool for a lot of moderate or lower income people to buy their first house. It gives them a 10-year property tax exemption on the improvement value of a newly constructed house. And it makes a big difference in terms of their buying into a modestly priced house. Every year we are required to set a price limit for the eligible housing. What we usually do is put it a little bit above the median sales price of housing sold in the City of Portland the prior year. This year, the maximum housing price is $165,000. So as you see, we're not promoting vastly expensive housing. We're promoting modestly priced single-family housing. One of the other things Council directed us to do was to take advantage of condominiums as a first-time affordable home buying opportunity. And so what we'd like to do also, besides continuing this program as an essential part of our home buying programs, is to include condominiums under the same price limit as eligible for this property tax abatement. And that's essentially it. Again, as Marge mentioned, this is the bill we had last session. It's urgent now that we be able to pass this bill this time, and I appreciate your attention. Thank you.
Questions?
Ms. Pierre.
Representative Farr.
Thank you. You say the moderately priced $165,000, is that the average?
No, it's not an average cost. It's based on the median sales price of housing sold before. So you get the median, counting new and existing housing, is usually a little less than that. And we're authorized by the statute to do 120% of the median price. Usually what we do is follow the market. I think last year we raised it 4%. So it accounts for new construction. The median price is based both on existing and new housing, so that existing housing drops the median down a little bit.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. The condominiums, do they fall into the same price range?
Yes, they would.
They would. Okay. I will have another question.
Okay. Representative Virgil.
Yes, this doesn't have as much to do with the bill, except I'm just curious. You have a relatively new urban renewal district, I believe. So what percentage of your land mass right now in Portland is designated as distressed?
We are limited by the statute to a certain percent. I would think we have a representative from PDC who implements the program, and I don't know the precise answer, but we're well under what we're allowed to designate as distressed. And we do change that every 3 years. We've recently removed some areas and added some areas in southeast Portland based on our best assessment of the socioeconomic conditions of the area. But I don't have a precise percentage now. I've done that before. I just don't remember it.
I think it's in the existing bill, or it's in the existing law on lines 14 through 16 of the bill. At no time shall the cumulative land area within the boundaries of distressed areas within a city 20%. Exceed 20% of
right.
the total
so,
land.
And we're under that, obviously.
Yes, sure.
And you feel that even with both of your bills, you would still fall under that, and with your urban renewal, which is a distressed area?
Yes, they are different programs, but we certainly comply with the elements of both statutes, which is not to say there isn't controversy about foregoing revenue. We always have the discussion within the city about choices in terms of our general fund revenue based on property taxes. So the council takes this very seriously, and definitely we adhere to the rule. I mean, we're not likely foregoing revenue.
Representative Barner, you had a question.
Thank you. Have there been some studies made that we could look at that let us know how this program has been utilized over the decade plus that it's been in existence?
We do, and I'd be happy to make those available.
The reason I asked the question is because we're dealing with a sunset. One presumes that the legislature, in its enormous wisdom back in 1989, put a sunset on it precisely so they could take a look now at how the program's actually done. And I think the explanation here of what the program does is quite good, but there isn't anything here that tells us that allows us to review the sunset in what certainly would be my intent if we were to put a sunset on a bill now. I mean, I think it would be quite helpful to have that.
And Mr. Chairman, if I might just answer the question too, Representative Barnhart, this program is reviewed in the tax expenditure reports that are done for the legislature every biennium. We've looked at those reports, and they are consistently very, very favorable. I believe that we are the only city that's using this program in the state right now, so the results are only ours. but as Mr. Saba said, we have produced more than 1,800 housing units during the life of this program. We have abated approximately $2 million worth of property taxes. So we feel it's extraordinarily cost-effective in terms of the cost per unit that we have been able to produce in distressed areas in our community.
Representative Barnhart, we have copied and on the desk page 226 of the tax expenditure report, which describes this property tax exemption. Page 227, which is not copied, is the evaluation page of this report, and the first sentence says, this expenditure achieves its purpose. So at least the evaluation is there in the ongoing tax expenditure report. And again, to clarify, this is a local option, and I think, as I understand the testimony and from what I recall looking at this last session, when the city of Portland agrees to forego tax on properties that are eligible for this program, it only foregoes the city portion of the property taxes?
No, Mr. Chairman, that's not correct. We are also foregoing the consolidated taxes on the non-school local government $10 side of property tax.
I thought that took a concurrence of local, of other governments.
It does.
Okay, well, that's my point.
Right.
I mean,
yes, it does.
Okay, the city can forego the city's taxes, but to enlarge that, to expand the exemption to other taxing districts, then it requires concurrence.
It requires the concurrence.
More than 51%.
51% mm-hmm. of the taxing.
We notify every taxing jurisdiction when we adopt these programs, as well as getting the formal endorsement of another taxing jurisdiction whose combined revenue is 51%
right.
of the tax.
Okay. That's what I wanted to get at. Thank you, Representative Kafoury. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome
Thank
back
you.
To revenue.
It looks so different in here. It looks great. Good morning, Representative Deborah Kafoury, House District 43. Just wanted to lend my support to both House Bill 2380 and House Bill 2379. I think we all realize that there is a need for more affordable housing, not just in Portland, but also in the rest of the state. And while I don't think that these are huge, life-shattering, life-changing programs, I do think that they are small steps towards helping ease that problem. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, further questions for these witnesses? We have a couple of others.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Barr, that's right. Back to you.
This is not just in urban renewal districts. It is?
No, it isn't.
No, okay, good. Okay, thanks.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, you prefer to wait to go to over the amendment until there would...
Oh, I'm sorry, you were going to do that. Yes, tell us more.
Okay, thank you. You have the Dash 1 amendments before you. The purpose of this amendment is this. As Mr. Saba explained, we are expanding this program to allow condominium developments. The realtors and others asked us if we would consider an amendment that would make it clear that prices for units in those condominium developments could vary, but that the units that would only qualify for our program must meet the price cap. So the first part of the amendment on the first page makes it clear that a qualified unit for our program would have to meet the price cap, even though other units in the same development might exceed that price cap. The second part of the amendment is to make it clear that we can accept applications that we are holding now for eligibility for the tax year beginning July 1 of 2003. The purpose of this amendment is to close the gap that we have between January 1st and July 1st of this year because of the sunset.
Okay. So on the condominium issue, then, do I understand that will apply on a unit-by-unit basis? Is that what we're talking about?
That's
the
correct,
effect
Mr.
of this
Chairman.
Amendment?
Right. Based on the price of the unit.
Right. Okay.
And that's been our practice. It's just that I think the Realtor Association wanted to make sure that was understood because there was some ambiguity without the qualification language that all the units in a building would have to meet the price limit, even if not all of them were qualified for tax abatement, and we didn't intend that. So it's just to clarify.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gary Oxley, you bet. John Chandler, I just saw your name appear on my sign-up sheet. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Gary Oxley, Oxley & Associates, appearing before you this morning representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. OAR is a 12,500 member association statewide, and they are in support of the bill that you're hearing this morning, 2379. For all of those reasons previously stated, we support the bill. Additionally, it provides, we believe, a good strategy for encouraging infill in certain areas of the city of Portland. It also provides additional stability for low-income and median neighborhoods. As you previously heard, approximately 1,800 new homeowners have emerged in the city of Portland since this program was initiated in approximately 1990. Habitat for Humanity and a number of church groups have utilized this program in creating housing for low-income families in the Portland metropolitan area. In addition, someone previously asked a question regarding any kind of studies that might be available on this. The Portland Board of Realtors, in fact, did conduct a study and found that less than 2% of these properties that have been converted and brought into this program have actually become rental units. So the program is doing what it was designed to do in terms of creating home ownership for low-income individuals. We believe it's working very well. It's helping meet the goal that it was originally intended to do. And we support the bill, we support the amendment, the Dash 1, and likewise, in an effort to save time, we also support 2380, which you'll be hearing next. Thank you.
Thank you very much. John.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. John Chandler, Legislative Advocates here on behalf of the Oregon Building Industry Association, and more specifically on behalf of the Home Builders Association of Metropolitan Portland. In support of both House Bill 2379 and 2380 and the Dash 1 amendments to 2379, the home builders in Portland have used this process probably not as much as they could or should, but to a significant degree. And one of the things that we like particularly about this program is that, as Mr. Oxley mentioned, is used by Habitat and other sorts of nonprofit groups. This availability of this program also opens up the market for the low and moderate income housing to private for-profit builders because it allows them to deliver a product with a little bit better market access than they would otherwise be able to do. We support it. We commend it to you, and I'll be glad to take any questions.
All right. Thank you for that concise testimony. Anybody questions for any of these witnesses? Very good. Thank you. Yeah, yes.
I just would like to make sure that the Dash 1 amendments actually do what they were intended to do, since we didn't have much time.
Okay. Well, we can schedule this for a work session another day if you want to look at the Dash 1 amendments. Is there some question as to the Dash 1 amendments, Andrew?
If the city feels that, because that was one of the amendments they would... they requested that they feel that it has done what they...
Marge, why don't you come back up for just a second? I do have a couple other witnesses on here I want to get to, too, but... These are dated today. Have you had a chance to look at these to be satisfied that they do what we intend them to do?
Mr. Chairman, Marge Kafori, City of Portland. We received the amendment this morning. I did have some V-mail conversations with Mr. Johnson from Ledge Council over the weekend. And we have a small question. And with me is Andrew Wilsh. He is with the Portland Development Commission. He is the housing director for the Development Commission. And maybe you'd like to explain to the committee what our question is.
Good morning. Thank you. Good morning, Chair Shatterly. Excuse me. Andy Wilch, Portland Development Commission, Housing Director. The LTA program, Limited Tax Abatement Program for Single Family, is very important to us and important to a myriad of policy targets in the City of Portland. I think both Marge and Mike spoke to that very well. The situation we find ourselves in is with the sunset as of January 1. We have 327 additional applications that are somewhere in limbo, if you will. Now, the City of Portland is looking to modify with a city ordinance to allow some relief for those 326 from now until July 1. But we also are taking applications. I'll use a different term. We're actually putting interested parties on a waiting list, if you will, and hoping to provide them with some certainty. As you know, there are finite timelines associated with eligibility, 24 months, for instance. We do believe that there will be some parties who want to put a house into the tax abatement program that would be precluded from meeting the July 1 timeline that this committee would pass. I believe, if I understand the language correctly, it's 90 days after
the end of the legislative session.
That's correct. And so we feel that there are potentially several homeownership opportunities that could utilize the LTA to serve the policy targets, the low-income and mod-income populations, and that what we would like to have reconsidered is if there was some way we could narrow the potential gap from July 1 and allow us to continue to accept applications rather than just putting eligible housing units on a waiting list.
Okay. What I may do, we've got some other, maybe one or two other witnesses here. I may just reschedule this for a work session, perhaps even later this week, and give you a chance to check with Legislative Council and with staff to make sure that we've got these bases covered in the Dash 1s, or if we need another set of amendments to close that loop. I'm content to wait that long. We certainly got lots of time to do it, but I think the signals are all strong. We just want to make sure we get this done right.
Right. Thank you. That's fine with us, Mr.
Okay. Very good.
Thank you, sir.
And that way, then, Representative Barnhart can satisfy himself as to the efficacy of the program, too, between now and then, if he needs more. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. I was prepared to give a courtesy vote on the bill today, but I really think that when we're dealing with a sunset situation, we ought to take a look at the studies that describe why it worked in deference to the legislature that passed the sunset provision in the first place.
Well, it sounds like we've got a couple sources out there, the city and also the realtors, so maybe you can get together with Mr. Oxley and get a copy of that realtors report. I also have John Christensen and you're from, are you from
Senator Carter?
Senator Carter's. Okay, that's,
I didn't write that, sir.
For one thing, it says Representative Carter, and I'm just really confused this morning.
Sorry, Captain.
Good morning.
She was a representative.
Yes.
For many years. In fact, I started with her in 1985. For the record, my name is John Christensen. I'm staff in Senator Carter's office, and distributed to you has been commentary or testimony from Senator Carter. Senator Carter supports this bill. North Northeast Portland needs stability. It is a area that has significant populations of minorities as well as low-income and moderate-income families. There are very important communities such as St. John's, which are working class neighborhoods that need stability and affordability. So we'd appreciate your consideration for the bill.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Christensen? All right. Does anybody else wish to testify then on House Bill 2379? I think what I said, we will put this down for a work session perhaps later this week and give you all a chance to take a look at the dash ones, make sure that they're correct, and then Representative Barnard can get his hands on that report and let us know if there's any issues to be considered out of that. And I think, again, the signals are good, but we'll just make sure we've got it done right. So I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2379 and thank everybody for that, and open the public hearing on House Bill 2380. And as I do, let me just remark for the record that during the course of the public hearing on House Bill 2379, we received testimony favorable to House Bill 2380 from Gary Oxley, John Chandler, and Representative Kafoury, who I think are not going to be testifying again on this bill. But for the record, then, if anybody is ever looking at the legislative history on House Bill 2380, they can refer back to testimony of those witnesses under the hearing on House Bill 2379. That said, Mazin, would you tell us what this one's about, please?
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2380 is a similar type of bill. However, it deals with the property tax exemption for multi-units of low-income housing properties, and it allows, in a sense, a process for the application for those properties to be looked at and applied and treated in a sense that adjusts timing. So they don't have to wait for the housing assistance contract before applying it to the properties, and therefore that might speed up the process itself and give higher and more success in the future for that process. And this is an existing program. The existing program does have a revenue impact as it exists, but however, this bill itself, since it does not make any extension or changes in the program, it would not have a revenue impact on its own. But the program, as it does by itself, have that effect. And it is also in the tax expenditure report, page 229. I made you only a copy of that page. That is page 230. You have also the continuation for that.
Okay. Let's bring up Marge Kafoury and Mike Saba.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Marge Kafoury, City of Portland. As your revenue staff have explained, this is a modification of existing statute. However, this particular aspect it would be a new program. What we are seeking is some tools that we can use to encourage rental housing that is privately owned to remain affordable, as opposed to 2379, which was focused on producing new affordable housing. This is focused on existing multifamily privately owned housing, and we are seeking some additional incentives to keep that housing affordable. Mr. Saba, with the Planning Bureau, City of Portland, will explain this bill to you.
Thank you again. Just once again, so we orient ourselves, this is like 2379, this is a local option exemption, operates under the same principles, the same mechanics as 2379?
That's correct.
Okay. Mr. Saba.
Thank you again. We come here, it's probably a little less urgent on this bill, and in many ways it's more conceptual in nature because we don't have a local program yet designed to do this, but as some of you know, I'm sure, we've been facing an issue locally in many of our communities about the threatened loss of affordable housing. We actually came to you two sessions ago and successfully got some amendments to this multifaceted tax abatement program for the construction or preservation of new multifamily housing in core areas of cities or in transit-oriented areas. What we added two sessions ago was the opportunity to locally use a property tax abatement to keep currently subsidized housing whose contracts were about to expire in those contracts if the owners agreed that local tax abatement for a period of time was a sufficient incentive to keep them in those low-income housing contracts, Section 8 housing, federal programs, state programs, or local programs that impose rent controls in return for subsidies for low-income people. What this amendment does to this statute is allow the city to conceive of a program that would provide a local incentive for property tax exemption for privately owned, non-subsidized, but affordable housing to enter into a housing subsidy contract with an agency of the federal, state, or local government. In other words, it's our carrot approach to try to get more permanently affordable housing in the city. So this amendment to this statute would really affect older housing, multifamily housing, that for market reasons is affordable low-income people, but is maybe facing market pressure to increase the rents and renovate the housing for a higher income market. What we'd like to use this opportunity for is to provide the benefit of a local tax exemption to say, if you enter in this contract, a Section 8 contract or other state or local program that keeps rents affordable for a period of time, provide some assistance to renovate the housing, make it safe and decent and affordable, we have this tool of property tax abatement to provide an incentive to do that. And that's really what that does. And I say it's a little less urgent than our previous bill because we really haven't conceived of the program locally on how to do that, but we would love this opportunity to be able to do that, to really keep whatever supply of affordable housing we have affordable for a longer period of time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Question?
Thank you. Can you pose this in the form of a problem that's out there now, a real-life problem that you think this will solve? In other words, give me an example.
Yeah. Oh, for example, there's a multiplex built in the 1960s in southeast Portland, for example. The rents in that area maybe are affordable to populations at 60% below median income. So it's fairly affordable market housing. But there may be pressures in an upward swinging housing market, which we aren't seeing right now, but we will again, for the owner to raise the rents, simply to upgrade the building cosmetically or structurally and rent to higher income households. That housing stock is actually seen as an important part of our affordable housing stock. It may not be subsidized now through any program, but it would perhaps be a benefit both to the owner and to current residents to make the housing affordable by entering into a Section 8 contract, project-based Section 8, or any loan program that would both upgrade the housing and keep it affordable. The local property tax incentive would be one means of convincing the owner of that housing to engage in that housing subsidy. And the impact of this is pretty unknown, but would be pretty minor. We envision maybe one or two a year. And it just would be a specific circumstance where the local tax abatement option would be essential for simply convincing the owner of the building to engage in a rental contract that would keep the housing affordable for a period of years.
Sort of a low-income gentrification.
Yes, exactly.
Incentive. Okay. Other questions? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a sunset provision on this law?
Yes, there always are. The legislature always imposes a 10-year sunset date on these programs.
Okay. Is it in this bill someplace?
It's in the statute. This is just amending a current statute, which I think sunsets in 2006.
I see. Right. So we'll be back looking at it next time after that.
So I guess, so we don't need to put a sunset on this if we're just amending the existing program. It will sunset with the program. Is it 2006?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, on page 5, section 8, line 37, applications have to be received by a jurisdiction before January 1st of 2006, which is the sunset.
And as with House Bill 2379, you have page 229 of the tax expenditure report in the materials, and also as with 2379, the rest of the story is on page 230, which actually contains a fairly extensive evaluation of the current program anyway, and says it achieves its purpose, although that's really not what this is about. This is really kind of marching into a different direction just to see if something might be developed in this multi-housing arena that we're talking about.
That's correct.
Representative Berger.
Yeah. There is nothing in this proposal that separates out, by dwelling unit. In other words, the exemption would apply to the entire multiple housing complex of whatever size.
Correct. Although we are perfectly able to work with the assessor's office in Multnomah County to, by a percentage, reduce the exemption for units in that building that may not meet affordability guidelines. In other words, in furtherance of our local mixed income policy, we sometimes are perfectly happy to see a range of incomes in a project, in which case we can just exempt a portion of the building for those units that would be affordable. We can do that as well as with condominiums. Condominiums are a little cleaner because each unit has a tax account number, but we do it. We deduct by floor area for multi-units that do not fully meet the terms of tax abatement program criteria. So it can be done.
Mr. Chair, can I pursue this just a little bit further? Follow up on Representative Haas's question. Do you have folks out there who have come to you and said, this is the stick that I need to hold price? They've actually suggested this, or did you come up with this on your own?
No, it's in response to an agreement the city made with owners of expiring Section 8 units, which was a big issue, and it still is a big issue. It will be again. There's another round of contract expirations, whereby the city was using a stick approach to try to keep the housing in the Section 8 contracts, and in fact developed a housing preservation program that the legislative assembly preempted in some senses, because the city stick approach was offensive, I guess, to certain elements in the legislature. So they preempted our ability to require a first purchase penalty if owners opted out of the Section 8. In other words, the city was requiring that owners offer the building to the city first under some penalties. Well, the legislative session a couple sessions ago preempted that ability. The other side of this was the carrot approach, providing some local revenue source that would try to, in a positive way, keep these projects under a Section 8 or some other type of housing assistance contract. So this is simply carrying this incentive approach through our discussions with these property owners to try to use it also as a tool to sort of induce people to engage in a low-income housing assistance contract. So it's a result of those discussions. It's not simply out of our heads.
And again, recalling the testimony from the Mr. Oxley of the Realtors and Mr. Chandler of the Builders Association from 2379, I imagine they would have been part of those discussions.
Yes.
And, Mr. Chairman, just to follow up with Representative Berger's, I think the line of your questioning, the city has to balance what it believes are important social goals through providing incentives of its own income, if you will, through the property tax base. And we do that very cautiously. It may not seem to from the outside perspective, but we really are quite hesitant to start new programs unless there really is a demand. As Mr. Saba explained, we expect that this will be used very seldom. So I think the fiscal impact to the city is probably going to be quite slight, although the effect of offering this abatement might be quite important for the populations that might lose their housing through gentrification or other means.
And just to add, from a fiscal impact, this is cheaper for the city than buying the building, which is actually what we do under the Housing Preservation Program. This is a more cost-effective way of achieving the same purpose.
All right, very good. Thank you very much. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Verger.
Just a couple of observations. This bill, you're allowed to have something in the urban renewal district. And then also, even though you don't have a program, it looks to me like you've outlined a very thorough process, which you would be going through with public hearings and
exactly.
so forth. So it would not be just an easy process
no.
for anyone.
That's right, Representative Berger. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah.
Does anybody else wish to testify on House Bill 2380? What I think I'll do then is close the public hearing on this, since these really move in tandem. They're conceptually related. I'll not go to a work session on House Bill 2380 today. Let's schedule that the same day we get 2379 back, then we can move them to the floor together. All right. Thank you very much. Next we have, keeping with our housing theme today,
in case it was too subtle for anyone to notice.
Chair, you know, Merv Griffin used to do theme shows like this. And,
That's right. Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2535. Mazin, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair, the House Bill 2535, if you notice, is very short in lines, about 10 lines or so. And what it attempts to do is just a simple extension basically of the sunset date. This is a true sunset date extension from July 1st, 2004. However, this doesn't have the problem of 2379, which is in danger of elapse. This probably gives it a year. It sunsets in 2004, and the extension is asked to be 2014. That's 10 years from next year. This bill, because of the sunset, would have returned some property taxes to local governments. You would find some revenue impact of about $2.3 million a year. That's in 05-07 biennium, about $4.7 million. But however, because it's only 1 year of this biennium, it will be about $2.3 million for the 03-05 biennium.
But again, as the with the first two bills we heard this morning, this is a local option tax exemption, so any revenue impact at the local level is voluntarily encountered by the
That's
local
right.
government.
That's okay. Nice.
Thank you very much. Let's bring up John Black, Association of Oregon Community Development Organizations. John. Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, my name is John Blatt. I'm with the Association of Oregon Community Development Organizations. We represent about 100 organizations around the state that are involved in developing housing that is affordable to low-income Oregonians. We are here today to support House Bill 2535. And as you've heard, this is a very simple bill, although it's very cryptic in the form that you have it. Like the bills that you've heard earlier today, the mechanics are very similar. It is a local option. You're not imposing a new exemption on local government. It just gives local government the option of exempting from taxes property that is owned by a nonprofit and that is affordable to low-income Oregonians. It, like some of the other bills you heard today, it does require the concurrence of the other taxing bodies to fully exempt the property. So what's different about this is that this one is actually more widely used around the state than the ones that you've heard this morning from the city of Portland. Those are, as far as I can tell, almost exclusively used in the city of Portland. This one is used around the state. My members report to me that they have this exemption on about 117 of the properties that they own. It's roughly somewhere around 30% of the units. And my organizations have developed about 9,000 units, so roughly about 30% of those units get this exemption. It has a couple of purposes. By lowering the tax burden on the properties, you can lower the costs, the operating costs of the properties, and that is done, and then that results in one of two things. My organizations either lower the rents or it lowers the amount of subsidy that needs to be put into a project to make it financially stable. And it varies from project to project, which happens based on the actual project's financing. The other thing that happens with this is that almost every source of funding that we use to develop housing is competitive. It's the department, I can't remember what the latest numbers are on the oversubscription to the funding sources, but it's, you know, on the order of 5 or 6 times the amount of money that's available. And they all require matching funds. The cities of Sutherland and Astoria in particular have used this exemption to provide that matching funding without actually having to put money out of their pocket. So in those cases, you're providing an option for local government to provide the match that it needs to provide in order to be competitive within the processes that allocate the funding without having to put out any of the, any money that is existing to them. So I will conclude my testimony if I can take any questions.
Questions? I should have looked at this before we convened this morning, but imagine maybe you can help me. This is the same series of statutes. This is the exemption that we dealt with last week with the housing authorities, isn't it, where we, the housing authority, not that this relates to your bill, but where the housing authorities have their own statute that provides for a continuous exemption, and they got caught up in having to reapply every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was under this statute that the that we moved them out of this statute so that they don't have to reapply every year. But under this bill, nonprofits, the private nonprofits, would still continue to reapply every year.
Mr. Chair, this is a different statute, actually. It's pretty close. This is for the nonprofit organizations.
All right.
So they still have to do many other requirements in addition. So it's not.
Right.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that yes, they do have an annual reapplication process.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Park.
This bill actually answers the question that I had for the Housing Authority. This seems to be a companion. Companion.
Right.
Statute.
And a very interesting section too here that. I'm sure you didn't request, John. I don't remember requesting it. It's a LC thing, obviously, where we're making ORS 307.540 to 307.548 a part of Chapter 307. How about that? Sometimes they just find homes for these statutes inside chapters somehow without actually making them part of the series. And I guess now we're just making them part of the series. So interesting there. If anybody wants Dexter to come down and explain that, I'm sure we can have him do that. But otherwise, Representative Barnhart?
Mr. Chair, I think what it has to do with is making the definitions in 307 apply to the statutes here, specifically, rather than by some ethereal implication.
Oh. Whatever. It doesn't affect my opinion of the bill. And for Representative Barnhart, this is an extension, and we do have at least the first partial paragraph of the evaluation on the copy of the...
Mr. Chair, this is a program I'm familiar with, which is used extensively in Lane County. I'm aware of the financial impacts and the success of this program, so I personally don't need an additional...
Okay. Thank you, John. Does anybody else have any further questions? Does anyone else wish to testify on House Bill 2535? Okay, then let's close the public hearing. It would be tempting to defer the work session on this to kind of send the theme day to the floor so we do all of our low-income housing, but at the same time, I want to keep our agenda moving forward. So unless there's any objection, it'd be my intent to go ahead to work session on this one today rather than just create a backlog that we don't need to create. So with that, let me open a work session on House Bill 2535. We have the bill before us, unamended. What's the committee's pleasure?
Determined.
Representative Williams.
I would move House Bill 2535 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Williams moves House Bill 2535 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Farr.
Just an item of information. I've been working with this for about 8 years now, and it's a very successful program in the city of Eugene.
Very good. Okay, please call the roll.
Representative
Farmer.
Aye.
Farr.
Aye.
Farr.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. House Bill 2535 goes to the floor with a due pass. Do we have a volunteer for carrier? Representative Farr? All right. Are we being equitable?
It's just fine.
All right. All right. 2535. Representative Farr. Carrier, that closes the work session, and with that, we are adjourned.
Come on, we're rolling today.